The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. And today's it's Wednesday, sometime in October. October 7th, I believe. And if it's a Wednesday, you know what that means. It means it's a Brady Quinn football show!
While we're That's watching right, another, Will.
Oh, yeah. Third straight home run for the Braves while we're watching. What a lovely time to be alive. The Atlanta Braves are threatening to win a postseason series against the Marlins. It's so exciting. The Marlins have, do you know that the Marlins have never lost a playoff series in the history of their franchise?
How many have they been to?
They've only been to the playoffs twice, and they've won the World Series both times. So yeah. It's crazy.
There you go. That is kind of nuts. It's like when they get in, they're in to win.
They've never lost a playoff series. Yeah. Yeah.
I said this to you before the show. I'm going to reiterate this. The way the media treated Derek Jeter and just the general impression of what he was doing to the franchise when he took over the Marlins, I hope they win it again this year just so he can literally pull down his pants, moon everyone, say, kiss this, because it was vicious. Like, no one accepted him. No one accepted their plan. And now I think he's kind of saying, like, look at these apples, you know?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, they did, like, let 42 teams into the playoffs, and they did win a –
Hey man, doesn't matter if they win it. Is anyone going to complain about the Lakers and them going and win the NBA finals? No.
Let me ask you that. In football, it won't matter unless we end up with a 10 game season.
Like, which one?
What's that?
Which we won't.
No, we won't. But I'm saying it won't matter. If we play 16 games and it's irrelevant.
We're playing 16 games.
I know that, but I'm saying that the only way this would occur for football is if, okay, for instance, college football.
Yeah.
The way things have gone with college football. There you go. You can make an argument that there would be an asterisk situation. However, I think that is stupid. Like the people are like, oh, the Lightning won the Stanley Cup. It's an asterisk. It's like, no, they had to pause the season in a pandemic, reboot in a bubble, and then play, like, completely disrupt their lives and play in a bubble. Like, it's not, if anything, it's a positive asterisk. Like, good job for you guys.
Yeah. Look, no one's going to care. When they take that into account. In fact, I want to say if you go back, just looking at, cause I brought up the NBA season and their finals. I want to say one of the seasons that LeBron won. I don't know if it was with the Heat. I think it was with the Heat. Was that a shortened season too?
Yes. His first title.
Strike?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean,
but like no one remembers that, you know, so if you're just looking at, you know, whether or not there should be an asterisk, I say no in part because like this has been straining on everyone. Like you could make just as good of a case that it's even harder to win a championship, during these times. And it's even harder to abide by all the rules and regulations, to keep you and your team safe and your family safe for that matter. So I don't view it that way. But again, I just hope the Marlins win so Derek Jeter can, you know, stick his middle finger up to everyone.
And I'll point out too that the 19, now how do we do this when we talk about this team historically? The Washington football team.
The Washington football team is what we refer to them as from now and forevermore.
No, I understand that, but I'm saying like, if I'm talking about the 1982.
Doesn't matter. The 1982 Washington football team.
Is that how we're going to do it?
Yeah, I think that's how you have to do it.
Okay. I'm not saying from like a cancel culture discussion type of way. I'm saying from like a, like AP stylistic kind of way. I don't know how that works.
I think this is the safer way.
You're probably right. But like you wouldn't call, so for instance, the Raiders won the Super Bowl
in 1968, right? Super Bowl
two. Right.
You would not call them the, you wouldn't be like, the Las Vegas Raiders won the Super Bowl in 1968. You know, like, it's, the Raiders won it while in Oakland.
Sure.
So it's just, I mean, similar thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, this different destination, not like, you know, team name or like mascot, you know, that's
totally. So we're, okay. I was just curious how we're going to handle that. Anyway, in 1982, the 1982 season was abbreviated to 9 games because of a strike. Ain't no asterisks on Wikipedia, bruh.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Hey, now that's up for interpretation if you're using Wikipedia as your source. However, it's a great source. I do donate to Wikipedia.
Wait, no, you don't.
Yeah, I do. I do.
You donate to Wikipedia?
I do. I look at it. It's a public service. So many people use it. I donate to Wikipedia.
That is a fun fact.
Yeah.
Fun fact, Brady Quinn.
Hey, someone's got to pay for it, so we don't have to have all these ads and so forth, right? They're providing you with information we're using on our show. Someone's got to do it.
I would not have pegged you as a Wikipedia donor.
Yeah.
Devo, are you a Wikipedia donor?
No, I have never heard of anyone in real life being a Wikipedia donor. So
I hadn't either. That's why I was
the first one.
$100 past 2 years.
Wow.
Each of the last 2 years.
Yep.
Did you write it off on your taxes?
I honestly probably forgot. I've probably had some larger contributions that I focused my attention on. So I've got my own foundation I'm running. So I kind of more pay attention to those sorts of things. Or, you know, for example, we've got a great fantasy football drive that goes to St. Jude. So I usually make a pretty nice contribution during that time of year for CBS.
So you don't donate $20 to St. Jude's for CBS?
I donated in the four figures.
Wow. $1,001. I'm just kidding. No, that's great of you. You are, look, hey, you know what? You give back. That's what I like about you, Brady. I was on Andrew Perloff's podcast earlier today, recorded it with him, Dan Patrick's producer. And, we were actually rating, handsome quarterbacks. He said handsome journeyman quarterbacks. I said, if you dare say that Brady Quinn is a journeyman quarterback.
I mean, I was a journeyman quarterback by the end of it. I was at three teams in 1 year, dude.
But then his producer was like, oh, he only played for two teams. I was like, no. He played for like a bunch. Okay. I said Brady's not a journeyman. He was a first round pick. And I gave you the most handsome rating out of the four guys that were brought up. It was,
I appreciate that.
You, David Carr, Chris Sims, and, there's somebody else that didn't even make the cut.
Huh. Boy, I wish we could have a quick segue out of this segment.
Yeah, this is awkward. I don't know why you asked me about it. Anyway, what am I talking about? I don't know.
I think it was just a humble brag that you were on Perloff's podcast.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, he asked me about something, a theme in the NFL this year. I said, I was talking with Brady Quinn about this. He goes, we've been here 3 minutes and you already name dropped Brady Quinn. So, which I just did with Andrew Perloff as well. I guess I'm just a name dropper today. Anyway, I was talking about the 9 deep that we were texting about. You know.
I mean, I haven't seen that outside of that one. This maybe on a couple occasions, but yeah. Well,
my point, we were talking about how do you stop Mahomes.
Right.
And I said that you do what the Patriots have to do. You can play the zone coverage on the back end so you can keep an eye on him at some point. I'm not saying it's foolproof. I'm just saying that's the recipe.
So I would say this. If you have the personnel to match up, right, you'd match up. You typically play man. You could even, you know, double one or two of those guys, depending on how many guys you want to rush, right? If you rush three, obviously you could double three of those guys and still play man and man coverage. The problem is not many teams actually have the ability to match up like that with man to man. So you typically play more of that drop eight, what many people know as prevent. But if you watch a lot of Big 12 football, you would say that's their defense. It's a three down front, usually with three linebackers. And then they've got five DBs, if not potentially more. There's a lot of five man boxes and it's only a three man rush and it's really hard to throw against. It forces offenses to kind of dink and dunk. You're throwing a swing to the running back out of the backfield or your quarterback scrambling for a 4 or 5 yard gain because no one can get open. Like, there really aren't many plays that you design for prevent. Like if a team's running, you know, prevent on you, like usually you're down in a game. You're just trying to get back. And that's the whole point. But against the Kansas City Chiefs, like teams are basically admitting like, hey, you're too good. We cannot stop you. We just hope to slowly let you work the ball down the field if you're willing to be patient enough. And that's really how the New England Patriots have challenged, Patrick Mahomes throughout the course of his career. And it's, it's been pretty effective. Like, I think if you're going to talk and go back to Monday Night Football, I thought that game was really won by the Chiefs defense, not so much the offense. And with the exception of mistakes by Hoyer and Stidham, obviously with the interceptions, and then Hoyer, just a bad decision, a brain fart to not realize he didn't have a timeout, get rid of the football, you know, kick a field goal at 6-6 at half. Instead, he takes a sack. They go in down 3. It's like, you don't need to spot Kansas City any more points than you already, you know, have at this point.
Yeah, you spotted him a quarterback with Rona. And maybe
you only let them score 6 points in the first half, dude. Like, that's a win in itself. Like, yeah. Are you telling me you get it? Anyway, I don't even want to get into that, but that's something that I think you might see more teams mix in. I think the way they go about getting to it too. Tony Romo, Jim Nance did a good job of down in the red zone showcasing one way they went about doing it. They showed a 5-man front. And then they had both edge rushers actually drop out into that coverage to with the other 6 players be a part of that. That's one way of doing it. And you'll see teams use a bunch of different ways. And it's really just to kind of mess with Mahomes, change up the look, mess with the protection calls, and just kind of change up the things you're doing. Cause that's the one thing, is you can't just line up and run, you know, your basic pre-event every single play and they know what to expect. They'll figure out a way of defeating it.
Yeah, and maybe the larger point too is we were talking on the Pick 6 podcast as when recapping the Monday Night Football games, like yesterday's episode, I guess. It was like, look, you can't – like the Ravens have to figure out – and I get Don Martindale's going to do what he does. I respect it. I understand it. But, like, if you blitzkrieg Mahomes and try to hold up on man coverage, it's not going to work very well.
Yeah,
it doesn't work. Like, you have to throw something exotic at him. And we were sort of discussing teams. Like, I think the Colts could have potential to do okay on the back end, sure, with their defense, the Steelers, maybe you can throw the Titans in there.
I think when you look at the Chiefs offense, they throw the kitchen sink at you, right?
Sure.
You get everything from, you know, reverses to, you know, these fake screens to the outside to a middle screen on the interior with Travis Kelce. I mean, just
like double jet sweep that with like pitches on the, like, it's crazy.
And so they throw so much at you. I almost think like the counter to it isn't some like vanilla, like safe defense. I think it's like a mixture of things, and it's you like making it look like almost like the Rex Ryan with the Baltimore Ravens days with the New York Jets when he got there. It's almost like making it seem like you're bringing a bunch of pressure and you just got guys running kind of all over the place and everywhere, but really you're only bringing 3 or 4 guys at times. And you're like, wait, what are they doing? Like, we've got a lot of stuff going on too, but you know, what are they doing on that side of the football? Cause that's the thing about the Chiefs is they are always on the offense. So I feel like all these defenses are like trying to figure out what the Chiefs are doing instead of forcing that offense to figure out what they're doing. I think most people are kind of scared to kind of challenge or attack them and not bring like these blitzes where you're leaving yourself vulnerable in the back end, but just the illusion of pressure at times and bring it from different spaces. Because yeah, I do think that's one of the things that you can catch Mahomes on is sometimes him not seeing guys coming off certain edges when they do decide to bring pressure.
Okay, good of me to derail the show for a solid 10 minutes or so, but that's good football talk. People like it. Let's dive into maybe some more off-field football talk as we head to the Houston Texans. They fired, after 4 weeks, Bill O'Brien as general manager and head coach, and they didn't announce it, but I'm assuming he was also fired as offensive coordinator.
Yes.
Probably. What if he should? He's like, I'm here for the offensive meeting. They're like, no, Bill, we
fired you for that too. Yeah.
Yeah. He said, well, you didn't list it. The way that, you know, Mike Silver tweeted this out that he had a conversation earlier in the week with Bill O'Brien where O'Brien thought he was going to be fired. Do you have any were you surprised by this? And or, you know, you played for Romeo Crennel, who's now the interim head coach. You know, you have some connections there. I'm curious if you think, like, what sort of the machinations were here?
Yeah, I think my insights to how everything has happened is just, you know, I think they felt like after giving up, you know, the lead of 24-0 versus Kansas City, that this team has just been taking backward steps since then. Like, it kind of started in that point. And almost like similar to looking at like John Fox as the head coach of the Denver Broncos, right? I mean, I kind of thought they were crazy when they moved on from him after all the success they had getting to a Super Bowl and they get blown out by Seattle. And I think John Elway was just like, look, like, I think we've reached our ceiling. I think him and Peyton Manning probably got together and said, like, this is as far as we're going to go with this guy. And John's like, all right, I know a guy in Gary Kubiak who can help get us past that and help us win a Super Bowl. Like, we've done it before. You've done it before. this guy, let's talk to him. I think he'd be what you want. And it just so happened that's how it worked out. I think they came to that conclusion, or I shouldn't say they, maybe Cal McNair, watching what happened last year in the playoffs and then watching the moves that he made this offseason, that if you're just going to look at this season in a vacuum, which let me just say this, I think it's a terrible way of doing it.
Sure.
But if you're just going to look at these first 4 weeks, the fact that Hopkins leads the league in receptions for, you know, the Arizona Cardinals, he's like fourth in yards or whatever it is. And you haven't got as much productivity out of the other pieces that you brought in, right? David Johnson, Brandon Cooks. You could make the case that Randall Cobb was a part of that too, considering the fact that, you know, they did sign Hopkins to an extension. There probably was some sort of issue, or would have been an issue maybe, with him coming back this year if he didn't have a new deal.
Well, he didn't show up in Arizona until he got paid. So probably.
Exactly. So, you know, that probably would have been the case in Houston, which we all kind of sweep under the rug like, oh, it's not a big deal. Well, look, they didn't want to set a precedent. They didn't want to sign into an extension. Like, that happens in business. But on the surface, you're looking at that trade saying, it worked out for the Cardinals. It didn't work out for the Texans so far, especially now that we've seen what that offense looks like through the first 4 weeks. So I just feel like they thought they were just moving backwards. And they've come back from 0-3 to be 11-win football team, win the division. They came back from being 1-4 and went 9-7 and won that division with Bill O'Brien as head coach in both those circumstances. I mean, they've won that division 4 out of 5 years. But I think they're looking at what they have in Watson, and they're looking at the future and basically saying, you know, Romeo's going to be the interim head coach. He's not going to be the future head coach, but they want to move on because I think they feel like they've reached the max or the limit of what they can do with Bill O'Brien at this point.
And by the way, just sort of now thinking back on it, because like you almost wonder if Bill O'Brien was calling around his buddies in the league, called Steve Keim, was like, hey, man, Hopkins wants a new deal, and I'm looking to move him. You interested? And Steve Keim's like, yeah, I sure am. You have to think that maybe Bill O'Brien wouldn't like, all right, I need David Johnson and a second round pick. Like maybe it was more like, I need a first round pick. And Keim's like, I can't give you eighth overall, dude. You know what I mean?
Like, think about this, like to your earlier point of the fact that he didn't show up until he got that new deal.
Yeah.
You know, that might've been part of the difficulty was saying like, hey, I've got DeAndre Hopkins. All right, sweet. Okay. And I want a first round pick for it. Awesome. All right. Well, like what's the holdup? Like, why are you getting rid of him? Well, he's got 3 years left on his deal, and he wants another 2 years on top of that once we paid more. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's
yards per reception have declined, and maybe he's lost this little bit of a step, and he wants to be the highest paid wide receiver over the next 5 years, but no big deal in that.
Right. So, you know, there was those sorts of things that I'm sure teams pushed back, you know, once they heard that. And they're like, all right, well, you know, let's talk about it. Let's see what maybe we can work out. And I'm sure his agent was helping to kind of facilitate this behind the scenes, but I think it's that. I think it's, you know, maybe if Bill O'Brien was talking about too, or maybe there's this idea that there's something going on with Hopkins, right? Like off the field, there's something going on. Look what happened with Antonio Brown. Maybe that was a cautionary tale because this trade occurred before Stephon Diggs, who I will say one is younger. And I think that plays a little bit of a role and factor into it and still kind of ascending.
Yeah.
But you know, bottom line is, you know, and even though he had some issues with Minnesota and clearly made that public, after the Hopkins trade, it was more like, oh, okay. And look, you can sign Diggs to a new deal, but I think the difference is in that case, in looking at it, is he's a younger player. I think there's probably more questions about the longevity of Hopkins and Steele.
The Bills upped his salary for 2020 by like $3.3 million, but that's not giving him a new deal.
Right.
Making the highest paid wide receiver in football. Right. Exactly. Right.
I like Hopkins. So I think we look at that and we're like, oh my gosh, like look how Hopkins is doing now with the Cardinals. Look at how their wide receiver group looks for the Texans. Like, this is why it happened, because Bill O'Brien as a general manager wasn't good enough. As a head coach, they'd reached their ceiling. They just want to move on in a different direction. And by the way, it's like a good week to do it because you got Jacksonville next week. So, you know, that's a game that I think they're going to be heavily favored, like at least for their standard. But an 0-4 football team to be a 6-point favorite right now. It's crazy to think, but like, yeah, they haven't won a game yet odds makers still feel like they should win basically by about a touchdown.
Yeah.
So it looks good for Cal McNair to make this decision. Romeo takes over. Tim Kelly's the OC now moving forward. And then they get their, you know, first win of the season without him. It's like, oh, okay. Cause that would have happened with Bill O'Brien, right?
That happened last year, with Jay Gruden. And I'm trying to think who we were talking to.
Bill Callahan, who took over. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Callahan took over, but they fired him right before they played the Dolphins in Miami.
Right.
They historically, and they go down there and get the win. And it's like, everybody's like, oh, Bill Callahan rallied the troops. Like, yeah. And I was talking to somebody, I think on this podcast, I don't remember anything anymore, obviously, but I was talking to somebody, I thought it was on the podcast. It was like, I don't want to attribute to anybody, but it was somebody who's a former personnel person. And they were like, yeah, that's when you fire them, right before you play the Dolphins. You know, like that's why you always do that, because you want to be able to get that win. Like it's an easy time to do it.
Yeah. But here's the reality of the situation now. You know, it's one thing if you had an interim head coach who maybe could get that job. And I know Romeo has done a good job as an interim head coach. I mean, heck, I've played for him before. And then he's worked that into becoming the permanent head coach, at least for the foreseeable future. But I think at his age and all that, they know that's not the direction they're going to go.
He'll be the oldest head coach ever.
Yeah.
When he coaches them interim or otherwise, oldest head coach ever. So they're clearly not going to go with Cornell.
No. And what the direction they want to go is they want to bring in an offensive mind. Someone who has, you know, worked with a quarterback with similar skill set or traits, to a Deshaun Watson. And so that could be a bunch of different candidates, right? It could be Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, who may have some desire, who wants to jump to the NFL level. And he might be the type of coach, because he's young enough, where he says, you know what? I don't want that GM title. I don't want to wear that hat. Or it could be someone like Dabo Swinney, who is like, look, if I'm going to jump into the NFL with anyone, it would be Deshaun Watson with the Houston Texans. Now, I did talk with someone earlier today, and they said, well, you don't think he'd want to follow Trevor Lawrence to the NFL? And I think of course he would think about that opportunity, or that might be out there for him if he wants to go. But I think the question you have to ask yourself is, does that team need a head coach? You know, so like that might be that perfect scenario, but we don't necessarily know. Why doesn't the Carolina Panthers have the number one overall pick? Matt Rhule is going to be their head coach. So newsflash, like Dabo Swinney is not going to just come in there, sweep away and take over. So, if it was to the Jets, if it was, you know,
Dabo Swinney is not going to coach the Jets. That would end up, that would go so poor. I'm going to just put my foot down on that rumor. That can't happen. Well, Dabo in New York City coaching the Jets that media market.
Come on, man. Give him a shot. He is.
Dabo's the man.
He's the man. Give him a shot no matter where he'd be. I think good coaches are good coaches.
Well, let me ask you, how do you think,
but hold on,
Dabo
hold on.
Would, okay, sorry, go ahead.
You're so
sorry.
Here's the issue with Dabo. If I was Dabo, or let's say I was like Urban Meyer, let's say a guy I work with, Urban Meyer, like the Houston Texans came calling, they're like, hey, you know, you've worked with quarterbacks like this before, you know, and you've been able to win championships before. Like, would you want to, you know, take this opportunity? It's obviously something you want to, you know, entertain and search out. I think though, as a former college head coach, you're the general manager. You know, you control who you give offers to. You control who you bring into your program. You have complete autonomy. And if that bothered Cal McNair, or they thought it was too much for Bill O'Brien and they just want to find a head coach, I don't know, man. I think if it was a part of my legacy, which I think for Dabo and Urban and anyone else that's at the college level, that's been a great that falls into it, I would be concerned. Like I would be concerned at how it would go, where you look like kind of Steve Spurrier, where you're like, yeah, no, he was great in college, but he couldn't do it in the NFL.
Right. Or Nick Saban.
Or Nick Saban, who's kind of got that label, right? So, that would be a concern for me, I think, if I was Dabo or any head coach like that, or Urban Meyer, whoever else, is I think I'd want full control and autonomy. That's what I'm accustomed to. And that's what I feel like probably helped me be successful at that level. And if you're going to come in there and immediately say, no, you've got to work with someone else and he's, you know, kind of your equal and you guys got to make like that probably ain't going to fly. And so that might be part of the difficulty too in making this decision. If you want to look at the college football ranks, you know, I'm sure they're going to look at a lot of other offensive minds. Josh McDaniels could make a lot of sense, given what he's doing this year with Cam Newton and given the fact that I think he wants another crack at a head coaching job. And how much fun would that be, by the way, for him to take the Houston Texans job after he spurred the Indianapolis Colts to get to play him twice a year? That'd be amazing.
And he's like following the guy who followed him when he left for Denver, followed after Bill O'Brien left for Penn State.
But then the question's like, are you going to go that direction again if you are Cal McNair? Like, if you're upset that Bill O'Brien's a fiery guy when things are good or things are bad, you don't think Josh McDaniels is going to be fiery too? I mean, I just, you know, that's the only thing there is like you'd be bringing somebody who'd be very similar in a lot of ways. So how does that end up working? How do you sell that? How does that end up working out? But there's some other offensive guys, offensive minds out there. Eric Bieniemy would be one that'd be up there. I think he should be at the top of the list. And then from there you say, okay, if it's Eric Bieniemy or Josh McDaniels, whoever else, how are they going to make our defense better? Because as much as we want to blame Bill O'Brien and because of this trade and everything else, Their defense is awful. They haven't gotten a turnover yet this year. They were giving up the most rushing yards. Everyone's almost rushing for like 200 Bills on them every single game. And yet we're like, oh no, it's because Bill O'Brien was a bad general manager and he made this trade and their offense is, I'm like, dude, they can't stop anyone. What does it matter what their offense does at this point? They'd be like the Falcons at this point. You know, no matter how good their offense could be, they can't stop anyone. So
they made the freaking Vikings look like the Hogs.
Yeah.
That first Dalvin Cook touchdown run, cause I was going back and watching it, and it's like, I mean, he has four or five gigantic holes to choose from. And they have JJ Watt on there. And look, Watt's great. He's a Hall of Famer, first ballot, no question. But I mean, like, he can't transform an entire defense by himself anymore.
No. Well, they don't have the coverage players in the back end right now, too. That's part of that issue.
Yeah.
But you know, between Watt and Charles Menehue and Whitney Mercilus, like they got like 10 sacks as a team right now, which is like middle of the road.
Right.
I don't know that they'll finish that way the rest of the season, but I guess my thing is just the timing of all this. I just think the timing is a little bit unfair, I think, to the players as well as to Bill O'Brien, in part because if you're upset about the trade, you gave it four games in a year where there was no offseason with the exception of training camp, which is a little bit different. And there's no preseason. And so, like, what do you expect? And look at their schedule. Like, who thought the Houston Texans were going to be better than 1-3, maybe 0-4 with the first four games they played?
Even Bill O'Brien.
Probably not.
Like, yeah, he's like, if I go 2-2, it's a win, man.
I was talking with John McClain from the Houston Chronicle about that. I said, well, when you picked them to be after the first 3 weeks or first four games? He goes, well, I pegged them to be 1-3. I was like, well, okay. I was like, why is everyone hammering down like this? Well, but they didn't look competitive. I'm like, look, it's not horseshoes and hand grenades here. It's like, you lose, you lose. Like, I know it, like, it makes a difference at the end of the day because people are going to be like, yeah, but we were so close. Like, well, okay. No one's looking at Dan Quinn right now as a winless football team as their head coach and going, yeah, but you know, they were so close versus Dallas, but they just lost. Like, yeah, they're being kept. Like, no one cares. At the end of the day, it's a win or it's a loss. It's all that matters.
In fact, Dan Quinn's probably getting banged worse because he doesn't
have a loss.
Right. Exactly. It's like, it was really close. Unfortunately, it was really close. I agree with you that the college coach thing is tough because I think if I'm a college coach it's tough because you got no head coaching experience in the NFL. But I would want to have something like Pete Carroll came into Seattle with when he had John Schneider or even Andy Reid when he moved to Kansas City, where you say, listen, here's the deal. I'm going to come in, but I'm going to handpick my GM.
Right.
And I'm going to have final say. I'm going to work collaboratively with this person. But you don't want to deal with the machinations of power struggles within an organization. It's sort of hard to imagine that happening in Houston, primarily because since Cal McNair took over after his father's passing, it's been nothing but that. I mean, Brian Gain was there for like 8 months.
I know. And how could you honestly evaluate a general manager in that amount of time? You know, it's unfair to him. And really, I always say this, like when owners make these sorts of decisions, there's one of two things that has occurred. It's either they were so bad at their job in such a short amount of time that you were able to discern that after 8 months, for example, in this case, or, you know, a head coach, for example, after only being there for a year. They were either so bad that you should then remove yourself from that process of hiring the next guy.
Yeah.
Or you should then again think about removing yourself from the process of hiring the next guy just because your process of hiring clearly is flawed. Like if you could determine after 8 months or a year that it's not working out, like you're the problem in either one of those scenarios as the owner making that.
We call this the Jimmy Haslam corollary. Like, just stop hiring the people, Jimmy. You're not good at it.
No. I mean, stop listening to certain agents. Stop listening to some of these search committees. Hire someone that's below you that you actually trust to make some of these decisions and go through a thorough interview process. So, and it doesn't matter if it's Jimmy Haslam or any other owner for that matter. And look, I'm not an owner and there's obviously a lot more that goes into it, but I played for a number of organizations. And you could tell by walking in each one of those organizations, which ones were winners, which ones were serious, which ones had a successful history or were going to be successful, and the ones that had no shot. And honestly, like it was that simple. And whether you saw the owner that much or not, based on how that organization ran, you got a feel for it as a player every single day you're there.
Danny Woodhead came on the Twitch stream with us on Sunday. Do you know Danny at all? He's a good dude.
I don't know him at all, but I know of him obviously.
Yeah. I mean, but I don't know him at all, but he was just on there hanging out, and he was sort of, I mean, I think philosophically, like, he was sort of saying the same thing. It's like, you know, you could tell, like, you know, you're like, oh, so this is how it operates here versus this is how it operates here.
Again, this is not to, you know, disrespect the Browns. I love the Browns. I'm a fan of the Browns. They drafted me. I was a fan when I was young. Always will be. When I got traded to Denver, it was just different. You got there and the expectations, for the equipment, you know, guys there, Flip, for Greek, the trainer who's been there forever, like, even those guys who aren't, you know, up there in the front office, with Brian Zanders, for example, at that point, or eventually John Elway, who came the following year, in his role, you know, you just felt like that degree of success and excellence that everyone was held accountable for. And it was different. And then, you know, I went to Kansas City, and at that point in time, you could kind of sense some of those things, but it just kind of felt different. You know, but there was some of those pieces that were there too. And then you go to Seattle, and I was like, man, like this team gets it. Like, this is why this team, I mean, obviously Russ is a huge part, Pete's a huge part, John Schneider, you know, the people that are there, but I mean, the ownership there, I mean, they get it. Like, the entire, that's was his first class of an organization that I was ever a part of. And so you can really understand why they've had the ability to sustain success and allow Russell to continue to grow and get better and better and better.
Well, and it's you sort of need to treat it like, picture it as a business and not a football team, in the sense that, like, if you have a winning culture that permeates every part of the organization, you're more likely to be successful than if you've got a bunch of, like, you know, not losers, but, like, you know, people who aren't excited to come to work and all that. All right, let's take a quick break. Brinson Business Philosophy 101. Highly successful businessman. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will give out quarter pole awards for the NFL.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former sports center anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
All right, so you mentioned the Seattle Seahawks. Decent chance that when we do quarter pole awards, we should go back and look at who our guys were last year and if they were remotely close to who ended up winning. I don't have any recollection, because we did this. I know we did this.
Yeah,
I don't have any recollection of what we would have picked.
I'm trying to think who I'd got off to a hot start. By the way, Stafford at this point would have been in the conversation based on how he started last year. Remember that? He got off to a great start.
Lamar Jackson was there. Dak was there.
Oh yeah, Lamar Jackson after week one versus Miami.
And then he versus Arizona. He's nuclear.
Yeah. I probably would have picked like Mahomes or Rodgers, even though they probably didn't get off to a great start. I probably had faith in them kind of rebounding, but.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll do this. We'll see how accurate it holds up. And you mentioned Seattle. Suffice to say, Russell Wilson in the mix for MVP. I think we both have him as the MVP. I would absolutely except Aaron Rodgers or Josh Allen. I think anything other than those three guys, is there an obvious fourth guy that I'm missing? Maybe throw Mahomes in there?
Yeah, you put Mahomes in there. Although, so here's what I'll say to make a case for Russell that he has over those other groups is, one, he's leading in touchdown passes, 16 now in four games. He should be on pace. You know, he is on pace to beat Peyton's single season record. But there's obviously some other guys who may be flirting with that too.
Yeah.
It's the fact that like the defense for the Seahawks is so different, in comparison to the rest, right? Like the Bills
have that's one way to describe it. So different.
The Packers have, a tough defense. You know, even Kansas City, you know, they won this past Monday night. I thought not necessarily from too many things their offense did, probably what their defense did. They've improved mightily this year. So
I would say they had the best defense of those four teams, Kansas City. Right now, just the way they
I'm not going to go that far. I would say I would still put Buffalo up against anyone else in that regard. But we'll see over the course of the season. But the point is this. I mean, Seattle, going back into last week's game that I got the call, was like historically bad in pass defense, like yards given up and so forth, like historically bad. And now they're great against the run, but that's also because they've led in a bunch of games. Like no one's, you know, really been running. And they have been, you know, executed relatively well too against the run with Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, but the point is like, he's had to do more, right? Like he's had to do more because of how their defense is played. So, I would definitely give it to him right now. I think Aaron Rodgers obviously is up there too. Josh Allen's played well, but there's still, you know, decisions and things he does from time to time that I just don't know that he's quite there, but there's no doubt he's in the top three.
Yeah, I'm with you. Look, by the way, you had Mahomes last year at the quarter pole.
Okay.
Probably makes sense. Mahomes has he ever lost a September start? He didn't have a September interception. No. And I had Christian McCaffrey, which is very clickbaity of me. By the way,
good pick.
Yeah, it's fine. That's 4 weeks in. I knew. I also find the quarter poll awards to be something where like you can sort of do a thought like I didn't think Christian McCaffrey was going to win MVP.
Well, let's really break down the reason why you picked Christian McCaffrey. Okay. You tend to be a homer. So anything like Carolina based, right? It's like Christian McCaffrey, Carolina barbecue. Darius Rucker country music. What else we got? Obviously NC State, anything, Philip Rivers, like even though he's not actually in, you know, he's not at NC State for a long time, you still pick the Colts to, I think, win the division, win the Super Bowl this year?
Win the Super Bowl.
There you go. Yeah. That all ties back though to you, your NC State ties, you know, being around the Carolina.
Maybe why I picked Russell Wilson.
What?
Now you're going to do this.
NC State. That's where he started. And then obviously transferred to Wisconsin. There you go. See, like it all comes back to your biases where I picked Russell Wilson because he's not the most touchdown passes and he's played the best this year.
Yeah. Look, I think I would bet that you could take, five guys. So Russ, Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, Lamar, and maybe Lamar. I'm just throwing it in because he won last year. I don't think he'll win this year. I think it would take a lot to win this year with the way he started and Mahomes. So maybe even take four guys, knock Lamar out. Is there anybody else in your mind that you could see surging into this list at mid season?
I mean, Kyler was through the first couple weeks and then he cooled off after their loss to Detroit. And now it's like, all right, like where is this team?
Where's Josh Rosen?
Jared Goff and the Rams, like I think he's going to continue to put up some good numbers. I'm not sure he's ever really going to be in the conversation though. And then obviously Dak. I mean, outside of, you know, those couple of names, Dak would be the other one that I think if Dallas starts winning football games, there's a shot. Here's the problem though for Dak is I don't think their defense is good enough where they're going to win enough. They might win enough to win the NFC East, but like that's just the gift that like keeps on giving, right? We talked about that a little bit yesterday.
Just give Dak the Offensive Player of the Year award already. And let's move on, right?
Right.
All right. So I agree. I think somebody could pop up. It's possible, but I don't think these teams are going anywhere. Packers, Bills, and Seahawks. And so I think eventually, unless Tom Brady surges, something like except Brady, maybe Brady's the guy. We shall see. We'll update you at midseason. By the way, Russell Wilson, less than 2-1. Mahomes, 3.5-1. Aaron Rodgers, 3.5-1 after last night. Wow. He was 7-1 going into last night.
Oh, it was beautiful last night. Just the flick of the wrist, man. That's all it is.
Josh Allen, 12-1. Lamarson Jackson is what Debo has in the rundown. Lamar Jackson, 14-1. And Tom Brady, 25-1. I don't hate that Brady investment. What about who's your defensive player of the year award or defensive player of the year 4 weeks in?
We're seeing no one after the way defenses look so far this year.
Juan Anderson.
I'm going to say TJ Watt for now. I mean, granted, you know, they didn't even play this past week, but, for a few reasons. One, like he's on a really good defense. I know that's part of it. He's been productive so far. I just feel like with what they've done so far, the defense has been the more stable side of that team so far. I don't feel like their offense has really gotten into rhythm yet. And he, to me, is one of the guys that stood out the most, as far as if you're just looking at defensive players in general. I think it's hard to really pick someone right now. I mean, you could always go with the standard, you know, Aaron Donald. You know, I think he's typically played extremely well, even though it's hard to build up those stats at this point in time of the year. It's hard to talk about any coverage players though, in part because just defenses are giving up so many yards, so many points. So in the passing game. So, TJ Watt to me has been the guy that's kind of stood out, at least at this point, even though we're coming off a week where he didn't play. But again, this is, this thing could go any which direction by the end of the season.
Yeah. Predicting a defensive player right now would be insane. I'll take Myles Garrett, 5 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, 2 fumble recoveries. 2 tackles for loss and 6 quarterback hits. He's been dominant. Za'Darius Smith has been really good too, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, when some of these selections were made, maybe we didn't, you know, maybe that game wasn't finished yet. So maybe you would have been in the conversation.
Yeah, that's right. No, look, I think you're right. Picking a defensive player of the year, we're just giving a nod to who's playing well defensively. There are not many people who are doing it, right now. You cannot bet on that. At William Hill currently. You can, however, bet on the offensive rookie of the year. Joey Backdoor Burrow has moved into the minus 110 range. I think he was like 2.5 to 1 before the start of the season, which that's pretty low odds to hammer for an offensive rookie of the year. But man, he is awesome. And he is our consensus offensive rookie of the year through 4 weeks. I was trying to be a contrarian and looking at maybe James Robinson or CD Lamb or Justin Jefferson. But I don't, right now, if Joe Burrow plays 16 games like this, it's over.
Hold on. I mean, Justin Herbert could be up in this conversation too.
No, Justin Herbert doesn't exist on this podcast. Thank you.
Okay. Well,
I'm just kidding. No, I agree. Justin Herbert would be the other guy that I think.
Numbers wise, he could be close. The biggest problem he has might be his head coach playing him or not the rest of this year. Right. Once Tyrod comes back, he's healthy.
You can't play Tyrod Taylor. What? You can't.
I know. Like, we don't need to get into this because I think we're on the same page, but, he's the future. He gives you a different dimension that they just don't have. Like, the ability to stretch the field vertically. He's still athletic too. He just lacks experience at the NFL level, but I think he showcased the ability to keep them in games. The hard thing is, unfortunately, the past 3 weeks, they haven't won within that quarterback, even though they played tougher opponents than when Tyrod Taylor, you know, went to Cincinnati and beat the Bengals to start off the year.
And they didn't lose because of Justin Herbert. Like, right. Justin Herbert was trying to get them back into the game.
Not the problem.
Right.
He's played great. In particular, I mean, he literally just came off his best game, I think, this past week, too.
Let me ask you this. So I didn't like Herbert coming out of college and didn't think he was going to be good or great. Or I think he'd be good, but I didn't think he was going to be great. Pete Prisco and I have had a feud about this. It's too early for me to bail on that take, right?
Yeah, it's way too early. I mean, look, it's too early for Pete to be carrying a flag like he won anything. I mean,
this may surprise you.
Yeah.
Doing that anyway.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like, he touts his picks like, oh, it's so great. You even pump him up too. I went 12-2-1 last week against the spread. I get no love, and we do a pick show together on Wednesday. It's unbelievable.
Well, anyway. In fact, people listening can watch that show. You want to ride a guy on a heater of a lifetime? Come jump on the Brady Quinn bandwagon, 4 p.m. No. Eastern on CBS Sports HQ. No. He
Don't
guarantees you 75% or better against the spread this week, or he will pay for your losses.
I cannot replicate what happened last week. And yet,
well, 2-1 is incredible.
By the way, when Pete goes like, you know, 10-5-1, it's like the greatest thing in the world. I blew him out of the water this past week. Not even like a congratulatory, like, hey, good job.
Really?
Nothing from Pete. Just silent.
What do you think about life on a text thread with Pete Prisco? Cause I never thought I'd know about it. And now I'm on one. I know you're on one too with a bigger group. It's, he's the worst texter in terms of like actually physically being able to text that I've ever seen before. He can't spell anything right. And like, he feels the need to correct each word, even though we know what you meant, Pete. I didn't think you were going to say bullshit.
When you go to Arizona State, you've got to prove to people you're smart, right?
I think it's his fat fingers, personally. But he, like, cause he'll type, he'll be like one of my favorite, he typed bullsherb one time. We're like, what the bullsherb? And he's like, no, you know what I meant. We're like, no, we didn't, Pete. What are you talking about?
I find that interesting only because it's kind of similar to how he tweets. He's very concise. straight to the point.
I would kick.
Exactly. Like, there's just not much to it, but it seems to rile people up. So I'm not going to say who the other people are. Jamie Eisenberg, Chris Hassel. But it does rile up some other people who are on that text. And the best is, like, I won't respond because I have a lot going on. I won't respond at times. He's like, oh, look, I got under the quarterback's skin. And I'm like, dude, I've got three kids. I've got a game to prepare for. Meanwhile, I'm going to watch all this college football for a show the day before in LA. And I got to fly across the country to South Florida to call an NFL game. And by the way, I'm remodeling a house we're trying to move into at the end of the month. And we're running a foundation, like, and I'm going back to my degree. But yeah, I'm sorry, Pete. I didn't have time to respond back to your group text or whatever the heck you said.
Your 42 text saying that I was going to shoot like a 92 the next time we play golf.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, and by the way, he did beat me one time at golf. I think I gave him strokes, but yeah, which is terrible, by the way. I think he also teed off from tees, like further up tees. Like, I ended up playing the tips. He played like just whatever's right behind the ladies.
You know the story about me and Pete in golf? I'm sure we talked about this.
No.
Oh my God. So I'll tell it really quickly. So we go and play with a couple of producers from Florida. This is a long time ago before you joined up at CBS. And, we're down, we played whatever, it was a TPC course down there in Miami or Fort Lauderdale, like 20, 30 minutes away. I'm not sure exactly which course it was. Nice course.
Anyway, West Palm, but yeah.
Yeah, probably. Pete and I are teamed up against the other two guys. We are beating them at the turn solely because I'm playing lights out. And I think Pete shot like a 56 or something like that.
That's not right. He's not a good golfer.
No, he's not a good golfer. I turn and look at him at the turn. I'm like, hey, man, you shot your age. Good work. And he goes, that's it. It's over. It's over. You're dead to me. We're not on the same team anymore. I will beat you. I will walk you down. I will haunt your dreams the entire back nine. I am going to torture you the entire time. And look, I got to be honest. I've never played golf with anybody like who did that. Like I've played golf with people who talk trash. I don't mind that. Like, that's fine. But I've never played somebody I was on the same team with who talked trash to me the entire time. Like, I hit two balls in the water on a par three. I was like, all right, I'll just take, double par. He's like, no, you're hitting every ball in. And like, I lost it on 18. Finally, I was like, that's it. I'm effing out of here. You can walk home. I'm not giving you a ride home. I don't ever want to talk to you again. I don't want to see you this afternoon again. I hate your guts. I hope you die. Get out of here. And then I calmed down by the time we got back to the car, but I've never lost it like that on the golf course.
Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of listen to what he says, and then I watch him hit, and then I laugh.
But he's like talking smack, like in my back. He's like, "Oh, it's gonna be a shankaroo on this one." You're like, "Get out of here." All right, let's keep moving. Sorry. Anyway, that's the Pete Prisco discussion. Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert probably win this because they're quarterbacks. Yeah. Defensive Rookie of the Year.
Well, Chase Young is who I've got. Although, whether or not he makes it back, for week five, we'll have to wait and see. Look, you can make a case for Derek Brown. I think he's been really helpful for a defense that, that team surprised me this year. I'm shocked to see how competitive they are right away. That's a testament to Matt Rhule and the rest of the guys on that team. But, CJ Henderson is the other player that I think I throw into that conversation. I think for a rookie, he's been pretty solid too, for Jacksonville. So those three, but look, if Chase Young's back, I think with the front that they have, and just the impact that he made on that front early, that to me is probably going to be the defensive rookie of the year.
If Chase Young plays 14 games, yes. If Chase Young plays 10 games, no. And here's my sleeper for it.
Well, he's averaging a sack a game or more. So if he comes away, let's say he has 10, 11, 12 sacks. I mean, Nick Bosa got it last year. I think he had what, 9.5? Do you have 10?
Yeah, I think so. But Bradley Chubb had 12 and he didn't win either. Who won the year Bradley Chubb won? Why can I not remember that? Nick Bosa. I just looked up Nick Chubb instead of Bosa. That was, sorry. Got a funked up brain here, Brady. 9 sacks for Nick Bosa.
Right. But it literally, like, we've kept talking about how that front could look similar to San Francisco. Maybe he has the same impact. And I think he did early on when he was there, that Nick Bosa had. So. Maybe even if 10 games, he ends up having 12 sacks. So their team's not going to be great, but, or good, but I think he's had the biggest impact of anyone.
That's fair. I don't disagree at all. If he plays that many games, by the way, Darius Leonard won when Bradley Chubb had 12, and that was perfectly fine because Darius Leonard was awesome. My sleeper.
Fouls and tackles in a season.
I know, it's ridiculous. Antoine Winfield Jr.
Yeah, he's kind of played like a bunch of different roles there, right? Like he's got a couple of sacks. He's been good against the run. Coverage wise, I don't know. I'm kind of still suspect on that defense. We'll see.
Well, I just think he can, I think he can compile the stats. And if they're really good and he's making plays late, it could flip it if Chase Young isn't healthy. That would be my only argument. Just a
sure. Sure.
Coach of the year so far.
I'm going to go with Matt LaFleur. I mean, I get it. They're a 13-3 team. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback, but they're good. I mean, they are really good. They are, I mean, and just managing. Massaging that situation. I mean, it seems like Aaron Rodgers is having fun. Seems like, you know, the Packers are in a good like headspace too with all of it. So I'm going to go ahead and say Matt LaFleur. And if you say Matt Rhule, which I feel like there's a chance you might do because he's the Carolina Panthers coach, I'm going to go berserk.
I had written down Bill Belichick. I'm not going to say Matt Rhule. I think Matt Rhule's gotten better lately. But instead of Bill Belichick, I'll actually go and do the same guy I picked last year this time. You picked Bill Belichick. I'll take Sean McDermott. 4-0. Bills are playing really well. He's a defensive guy, but whatever he told Brian Daboll to do has got them. He's empowered Brian Daboll to be more aggressive on offense, and it's paying off really well for Josh Allen. So I will say Sean McDermott. And I think has he won it yet? Sean McVay won it.
Sean McVay won it. Sean McDermott has not, but that's
Sean
a great.
Sean McDermott is deserving of a coach.
Probably should have thought of that. To be honest, probably should have thought of that. The Belichick won it. I don't know, man. Like that, this past Monday Night Football game, I thought his scheme was tremendous. Their defense executed pretty well, but the decision to start Hoyer then switch the system, I was like, all right, well, what was the point of Hoyer in the first place then? And then look, I mean, I put it more on Hoyer not being aware of not having a timeout at the end of half. Sure. That's not on Belichick, but it is odd that he didn't know the situation. Like usually, like they are so good at that. And I don't know. It's surprising to see like that's how that play and that's how the half turned out.
Belichick was angrier in that game than I think I've not ever seen him, but like.
Rightfully so. It was an awful call by the officials on what should have been a fumble by Mahomes.
But you could see it in his anger where he's like we have this game. Like we have a chance to steal a game from Kansas City in Kansas City
with a back
like on a messed up week with Brian Hoyer starting. He's like, and you guys dropped the picks. He's like, you screwed me on the call. And Hoyer, are you kidding me? Like I coached my masterpiece and you do like, and you guys screw it up. Come on.
Yeah. It's crazy to think like how close that game really was. You pull away with a pick six and just throw on another three for the field goal at the end of the half. And like, you look at where you're at, you're going, holy crap. Like they shouldn't have been close.
Yeah.
Yet he's legit, man. He's special as a head coach. There's no doubt.
He's the GOAT. All right. And you are the GOAT of Brady Quinn Football Show podcasting. Thanks as always, man. We'll talk to you. Is that that's everything? I think. Yeah. That's all. I will see you later this afternoon on the pick show. Make sure to watch Brady and I on CBS Sports HQ 4 PM Eastern for a full hour. Was it half hour? Half hour.
It's not what it used to be. I know that.
Is it shorter or longer?
It's shorter.
Okay. I think it's a half hour.
I think we do it like 40 minutes, 45 minutes.
That's right. Yeah. It's like 40 minutes. It's compressed.
Yes.
Yeah. It's compressed, but it's fun.
It's compressed and it's also kind of depressing.
Yes.
Well, no, just, you know, we get like bumped out by soccer now.
Oh yeah. That's ridiculous. Yeah, like Champions League. Please. You think those guys are rich? We're rich. Come on. Anyway, I don't know what the hell. Let's get out of here. Thanks, Brady. Talk to you later.
See ya.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount+.